This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time.
Victoria Hannon is a writer, photographer, and creative director living in Melbourne. Her first novel, Kokomo, was the winner of the 2019 Victorian Premier's Literary Award for an unpublished manuscript. Welcome, Vic.
Thank you. I've been listening. I think I've listened to every single episode of this podcast.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Very exciting to be on here.
Oh, that's lovely. Okay, well, let's start at the start. Have you always been a writer?
I think my mum claimed that she knew I was going to be a writer from when I was about five. I don't know where she got that idea from, but I think it took me a little bit longer to work it out. I knew for a little while when I was younger, I thought I wanted to be an actor. And I did quite a few acting classes through my teenage years. And then I just realized that I didn't like people looking at me. And so a writer seemed like a bit of a better idea. But at school, I never wrote that much. I enjoyed English, but my teachers didn't seem to think I was very good at it. And I used to kind of use writing maybe to make my friends laugh, but not for any other reason. So it wasn't until I went to university where I studied and I did an arts degree with a major in professional writing and communication. And I thought that maybe I wanted to be a music writer or a travel journalist. But it wasn't until a few years later that I really sort of got the bug for writing fiction.
And do you remember the first thing that you had published?
I do. When I was in first year university, I wrote a couple of very silly articles for my university street press or university paper. I think they were just interviews with bands or comedians or just anyone that I could get to reply to my emails. And I think that was, I got a bit of a buzz from seeing that. But then after university, I did a bit of music journalism. So I was writing a little bit for street press here and there and also for some online magazines, a little bit of travel journalism too. And then eventually I just fell into copywriting. And so I've worked as a copywriter now, I think, on and off for about 17 years. So I've been seeing my writing in print and hearing it read out on radio ads and on videos for a very long time. But I've always found that work, like, apart from the fact that it's taught me a lot about the craft of writing, I've just found it very unsatisfying. I think it's that you're writing in somebody else's voice into somebody else's brief. And so throughout those sort of 17 years that I've been doing that job, I've always eventually found my way back to fiction.
And so what sort of fiction did you start out writing when you found that way back?
I heard about NaNoWriMo way back in, I think, 2003 or 2004, and I was working at my very first copywriting job with a very disgruntled art director named Graham, who I shared an office with, and he would...
Shout out to Graham.
I hope he's doing listening. Okay. He had a screenplay that he was working on about a disgruntled private detective whose name I think was also Graham. And so he would sit at his desk every day and tap away at this screenplay. And so I was sort of inspired by Graham in a way to kind of tackle a bigger project. And then I heard about NaNoWriMo and I thought, what the hell? And so one November I spent all the time that I should have been writing copy, working on the first draft of a novel. And so that was a long time ago. And I think I got to the end and I managed to write the 50,000 words in the month. But then come December 1st, I just deleted it because I knew it was bad.
You deleted the whole thing?
I never even read a word of it. I just deleted the whole thing.
Oh, my God. That's so...
It was just a kind of challenge to see if I could, to see if I was able to write that many words about one thing and sustain a narrative for that long. And after I was done, I was like, okay, I can do that. What next?
Oh, my God. And so did other manuscripts come after that?
They did. For a little while, I was sort of obsessed with writing short stories, and I thought that I would love to one day publish a book of short stories. And I really enjoyed McSweeney's at the time, so both the quarterly and the website, the Internet Tendency. And I really liked, I kind of roll my eyes when I think about it now, but really liked the work of Dave Eggers. Such a cliche.
No, but it's good at the same time. Like, I love McSweeney's Internet Tendency, and I've read your article on it, and it's very funny.
Yeah, so that came about because I was sitting at, I moved to the UK in 2006, I think, and I was sitting at my boring copywriting job, and I saw that they had a short story competition where the prompts for the short story came from F. Scott Fitzgerald. Again, I roll my eyes. F. Scott Fitzgerald's diary. And so they were some of his old writing prompts that he never used. And so I thought, oh, what the hell, I'll just enter. And I wrote something very quickly and sent it off and didn't really think about it again, and then found out probably about 2 months later by visiting the website. They never told me, but saw that I'd come runner-up in that competition.
Oh, my God.
That was probably like the biggest, until winning the VPLA, the biggest sort of writing validation I've ever had in my life. Just something that I really respected and loved, saying like, this, it wasn't the best one, but it was all right.
That's incredible. I can't believe they didn't tell you, but yeah, I
think, cause I visited the website every day anyway, so I was going to find it eventually.
It. Anyway, it's very beloved, that website, and it at the same time feels like a two-bit operation. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels,
it's
very sort of,
it's always looked
random.
Very lo-fi, and I kind of admire that they've never tried to, like, ritz it up.
So you have a few early short stories, manuscript, then Kokomo comes along. Where did it begin?
So I started writing it in 2017. I had moved back to Australia in 2015 and taken a full-time job as an associate creative director at an advertising agency where I was working for boss who I think, when I think back now, I'm pretty sure he was a sociopath, and a client who was a bit of a bully. And I was just, it was awful, and I was miserable, and I don't know why I stayed there for so long. But it got to 2017, and I was just so stressed all the time that my hair was falling out and just, you know, fun things like that. And I decided that I just needed to change something, and I'd had the idea for Kokomo for a little while. And I just decided to apply for some writing residencies around the world. And if I got into one, I was going to quit my job and go and write a first draft of the novel. And I ended up getting a residency in Brazil. So I, true to my word, I quit my job and I flew to South America, and I spent a month on the island of Ilhabela, which is off the coast in the province of Sao Paulo. And I was just ravaged by insects the entire time, and everything was, it was so humid that like my bed sheets were wet most of the time. It was a wild time, but I managed to write the whole first draft of Kokomo in the month that I was there.
Oh my God. Talk about throwing it all, like rolling the dice, isn't it?
Yeah, but I needed to quit that job anyway, so at least it gave me a really good excuse to do so. Otherwise, I just would have ended up probably freelancing elsewhere. But I just, the story was sort of burning a hole in my pocket, I guess, and I just knew that I needed to get it out. And it was the first time that I have written a first draft where I was like, I think this one is a keeper. And so about, you know, so that was May 2017, and then February of the following year, I did another residency, this time in the not quite so exotic Tasmania. But I spent 3.5 weeks there, and I wrote another draft in about, yeah, in that 3.5 weeks. So about 50,000 words in 3.5 weeks.
So had you written in between, or had it rested?
It had rested. I was working, so I was freelancing as a copywriter, but just thinking about it constantly. And when I went into, so when I wrote the first draft, I didn't really have a plan. I didn't know what the whole plot was. It was just kind of an idea and some characters. But when I went in to write the second draft, it was fairly well plotted out. So I had kind of a document which was like, this happens and then this happens and then this happens, so that every day I could look at what the next plot point was to write to. And to get that much work done in 3.5 weeks, I really had to have it pretty planned.
So what did each day look like within that 3.5 weeks?
So I would get up around 6:30 and have some breakfast and start work around 7:30, and work pretty solidly until about 3 in the afternoon, and then either go for a swim, it was February and the weather was beautiful, or go for a walk or a run, and then maybe read a bit, maybe just watch some silly TV because I just didn't really have the capacity to do anything intellectual after that much work. And then have dinner and then go to bed and then do the same thing the next day and then the next day and then the next day.
Oh, my God.
I was pretty much unable to hold a conversation with anybody by about week three. I was just so in my own head. And I feel sorry for the people that ran the residency because they just, don't know what they thought of me. It's like very insular, quiet person talking to myself in the corner. But I got the work done and I did another couple of drafts after that, but I was kind of amazed with myself for getting much work done that quickly.
That's incredible. And so that draft obviously built on the previous draft and you had a plan, but how much of that felt like new words? Was it a lot of like
I started from the start again. I started with a blank page. I changed the setting and half the plot and a bunch of the characters. So it was the heart of it was there, but it was almost a completely different story the second time round.
It's incredible. One of the things that really stuck out to me in reading Kokomo is how much it feels like Melbourne. And I mean that from a landscape perspective, but also just from the point of view of the characters are so diverse and they feel very Melbourne. Was that one of the things that was important to you in writing it?
I think it became more important as the story developed and as the setting developed. I wanted it to reflect my experience of coming home. So obviously the character of Mina comes home quite suddenly and has to face some demons and some problems with her parents and or parent at that point. And for me, it was a case of I moved back to Australia because my dad was unwell and I wanted to spend some time with him. And so it wasn't because I was sick of London or sick of kind of living overseas. It was very much, I don't want to say obligation, but it was moved back out of for love of my family. And so I was kind of just working through some of those ideas of what home means and what are the reasons why you do this and what family means and just all of those things I was trying to unpack as I was writing. And so it was very much reflecting my own experience of being here and I guess also the diversity of my friendship group. I didn't want to write just a whole bunch of white people because that's not what my reality looks like.
It's interesting you talk about that, the mirroring of your own experience. I have to ask about the beginning of this book. Do you get asked about the beginning a lot?
I think people are embarrassed by it a little, so not really. A few people have asked questions.
I love it. For listeners that haven't read Kokomo, it opens with Mina in a sort of a sexual encounter and there's a penis. Like a penis is very present in this scene, and then Mina receives a phone call.
The star of that
it is chapter. Very much, and there's quite like really beautiful. I think there's a ballerina, like the imagery that you use for the penis is really really beautiful, but starkly contrasted with this phone call that comes from home.
I wrote that chapter on my phone on the train platform at Bell Station. And it made me laugh so much. And it remained mostly unchanged from, so I think I wrote it maybe from draft two onwards, it was there. And I was surprised that it made it through to publication, but the fact that it did made me very happy.
Well, it's a great contrast, really, isn't it, between like sexual acts of love and then this drawing of home. Like it's a very apt beginning, really.
Yeah, and that was kind of the point, I guess. The book is about all different shapes and sizes and colours of love, and I wanted to show the extremes of that. I think a few of the Goodreads reviews that I have read, and I try not to read those anymore, have said that they couldn't read past the first chapter and it didn't sit well with them. So it was really interesting to kind of see people's reactions to it.
Was it something that you and your editor talked about at all?
There was never any question that it was going.
Right. Yeah.
Just always going to stay, which I was really surprised about, but happy.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, so you finish Kokomo and it ends up, we know that it ends up winning the Victorian Premier's Unpublished Manuscript Award, which is incredible and it's so deserving. Was that competition a goal that you'd had in mind for a while?
I knew that it existed, and I knew that there was a deadline for it coming up. So I finished the third draft of Kokomo at a different residency, this time in Iceland. It's really been around, this manuscript. And so after I finished that draft, I knew that the deadline was coming up, and I just thought, that's something that I can aim for, I can enter it into, and then just keep working on it, or put it in a drawer and never think about it again. There was a lot going on with my family at that point. Between me writing the second and third draft, my mum had been diagnosed with cancer. And so it really felt like writing that third draft, it was like now or never, I'll get it done and then I'll just, you know, get a serious job and help my family out and just settle down and stop thinking about this silly writing dream of mine for a little while. And so I just sent it in and I just forgot about it. I actually forgot that I had done that, and obviously didn't assume that I was going to be shortlisted, let alone win. And I definitely didn't understand what a big deal it would be to win that. Like, I didn't understand the attention that it got from the industry and just how much weight people put on even just making it, being highly commended in that, has resulted in a lot of people getting book deals. So yeah, I almost feel lucky that I didn't know before I entered, because I might not have entered if I had any idea of what was to come.
And do you remember what you were doing when you heard that you'd been shortlisted?
I was walking down the street in Los Angeles, of all places. And I was
on a retreat?
I was there for a wedding. I was just there for a very short amount of time. And I was, they had tried to call me, but I had a US SIM in my phone. And so I ended up getting an email from Ronnie from the Wheeler Center telling me that I'd been shortlisted. And my friend and I were on the way to get sushi. So we got dinner and then had quite a lot of margaritas to celebrate after that.
What a great moment.
I cried on the street somewhere in West Hollywood, that's for sure.
Oh, if you've got photos. And so when you ended up winning, you've sort of intimated this, but what happened? I mean, it's a fairly life-changing moment, I imagine.
I feel like things started happening the minute the shortlist was announced. So I feel like it was almost within 10 minutes of the shortlist going public, I had a couple of emails in my inbox from publishers asking to read the manuscript. And I just sort of closed my computer and ran away because I was so overwhelmed by it. I didn't really know what to do. And I ended up, every year the shortlisted people for the VPLA get put in touch with the previous year's winner to see if they have any questions or they want some advice. And so I reached out to Christian White, who won the previous year, and asked his advice about whether or not I should get an agent. And he said, absolutely do it. So I ended up signing up with Curtis Brown. And I'm with Pippa Masson at Curtis Brown, who's an absolute godsend. And I know that Kate talks about her very fondly as well. And she was like, let's not send it out to anybody. Let's just wait and see what happens and keep working on it in the meantime. So even after the shortlisting, I was still working on the draft. And then once I won, we actually kept working on the draft and kept working. So I probably did another month's work on it before
I sent
it out for submission.
That must be a kind of a cool month, though, because you've already had some really great feedback. You're just zhuzhing.
Yeah, that was the point where I felt pretty confident that this book was going to be published. Although I did have one thought, which is like, what if I'm the first person to ever win this award who doesn't get a book deal out of it? That's like, yeah. It feels like something that's going to happen to me.
That's right.
But thankfully it didn't, and it worked out for the best.
Terrible how you think that's the way you'll become exceptional. You'll be that one person.
But I feel like one thing that I have learned throughout this process is that nothing, like, you should almost expect nothing. Like, nothing is a given. You don't deserve a certain amount of attention. You don't deserve awards. Everything that you get is, apart from, you know, publication is a wonderful thing that I'm very grateful for. And everything on top of that is a real gift.
How do you think you arrived at that perspective?
10 years of therapy.
Yeah, okay.
And also just like lots of positive self-talk. And also talking to a lot of writers, and then I guess you see other people kind of complaining about how their books have gone. And I think just seeing that high expectations can lead to disappointment, probably almost will inevitably lead to disappointment. Mm.
So Kokomo ended up coming out in July of 2020. Am I right in thinking we were in lockdown then?
So we went into stage 4 lockdown on the day of my launch. So that was early August.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So there was a hint, there was that beautiful period in between lockdowns where someone had hinted that maybe I'd get to do an in-person launch. And then obviously the numbers got very high and we went into stage 3 lockdown, and then it was obvious that that wasn't going to happen.
It's interesting. The experience of a book coming out during lockdown feels like very common now, but hopefully one day it's not. And it certainly wasn't before that. What was publication like in that environment?
It was hard and it was disappointing, and I had the added, stress and sadness that my mum got a terminal cancer diagnosis about 4 days before my book was published. The experience of book publication for me is very mired in kind of that grief and that experience and that stress and that sadness, as well as just feeling like it was really hard to celebrate the good moments. Yeah. My dream was to have a launch where I could have a drink with all my friends and hug them, and I ended up having a launch which was incredibly joyful. And one of the positive things about it was that I had so many friends overseas who were able to be there for it, and my family were able to be there for it in Adelaide, where, you know, I had friends in America get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch
gorgeous.
It, which was, and I was just kind of quietly weeping as I scrolled through all the people, like the little faces of the people that were there. But yeah, it felt very hard to kind of have those big celebrations and celebrate those really positive moments. And then, like, even things like my first Writers' Festival was Melbourne Writers' Festival, and I was so grateful to be able to do it, but I sort of hung up the video call and then went and just, like, emptied the kitty litter. There was none of that beautiful kind of meeting with writers and going for a drink afterwards and having those celebratory moments. So I think that was the hardest part, as well as just kind of dealing with my grief. And so my mum ended up passing away about 3 months after my book came out, to do hotel quarantine in Adelaide to get there in time, and found myself doing book promotional events from my hotel room. And I actually think, looking back on it now, if it wasn't for the book coming out in that time, I don't know how I would have got out of bed in the morning. Having it out in the world and having people respond so positively and generously to it was probably the only thing that kept me standing in that time.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah, I feel incredibly grateful, but also obviously wish that it all happened under different circumstances, but we don't get to control these things, so.
I think also, like, it's very easy to see a book coming out as the peak of something, but you can be super hard and, like, very happy and sad at the same time. I think you can, feel multiple emotions.
I think so. And, I mean, I feel really lucky that the book came out before Mum passed away and she got to read it and not comment to me about that first chapter, thankfully.
Didn't she? Good on her. That's great.
She didn't say much about it, to be honest, but about the book in general. But
yeah.
She was very proud of me, and I will hold that with me forever.
That's really special. Even seeing Sydney Writers Festival is happening this year, they've got an event for debut authors, which seems like it would be a really, really fun event to go to, all the people whose books came out last year.
Yeah, I'm flying up tomorrow, actually.
Oh, are you to go?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So that will be really fun. And I'm part of a bunch of different group chats with other writers who are all going to be there. And we're all just talking about what we're going to wear. And everyone's very excited to be able to see each other and congratulate each other. So this will be a very lovely celebratory moment for everybody who missed out.
That's fantastic. It also has the niceness of it's a celebration kind of for you, but you're not the center of attention. which kind of takes the pressure off as well.
I think there will be 15 minutes where we are the centre.
Oh, okay.
But then thankfully after that, we all get to go hide in the corner, which is where we all naturally belong, I think.
Okay, we're getting towards the end. You've already given some advice for other writers, but I wonder if there are any other pearls of wisdom you have either about writing or about really the head game of being a writer.
Do not ever look at Goodreads and don't ever follow the hashtag or look at the hashtag for your book on Instagram. They're my top two.
I don't...
Yeah, just don't, Catherine. Just stay.
I did
away.
A hashtag as well. I don't know why people do that. Like, as a reader, why you would copy someone in on.
I have your been terrible... tagged in a few not so positive reviews on Instagram. And, like, I appreciate Bookstagram. I love that it exists. I love that people are so passionate about books. Please don't tag the writer if you're giving them a negative review.
I think that's fair. Recommendations. What is your favourite novel by a debut author?
I have been thinking about an answer for this question for so long, and there's 100 that I could choose, but I think For the Love of a Bad Man by Laura Elizabeth Woollett is phenomenal. Like, I can't believe that she wrote that book. I mean, she was probably in her mid-20s. I think it's an extraordinary piece of work, and she is an extraordinary talent.
We also have the first time quick five. Are you ready? Okay. This is the first time quick five with Vic Hannon. You can pass on any question. For your first time, agent or no agent?
Agent.
Advance or no advance?
Advance.
Published in Australia, New Zealand only or overseas territories as well?
Just ANZ.
Festival invites or no festival invites?
Festivals.
Number of copies sold?
Last I heard it was 10,000, but I haven't had an update in a while.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's huge.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.